Let's kick things off with Joe Frank. If you've listened to a lot of public radio over the years, there's a good chance that you've heard of Joe Frank. But there's also a good chance you've never heard of him. Joe Frank is a legendary radio artist who transformed audio storytelling with his richly textured, mind-bending radio shows. These shows combined scripted drama, improv comedy, and intimate conversations. His work is unlike anybody else's, which is probably one of the reasons why he's not nearly as well known as he should be. Frank passed away in January at the age of 79. But while he was still alive, Chicago filmmaker Dave Carlson had a chance to interview him a few times. Carlson has made a new documentary called Joe Frank, Somewhere Out There. This American Life's Ira Glass, comedian David Cross, and actor-writer Harry Shearer are all fans of Joe Frank's iconic radio art.
Now let me tell you the truth. Joe Frank is a character that I created, who I pretend to be. But I'm not really Joe Frank. My life doesn't even remotely resemble Joe Frank's. Yet, what I'm saying now, the admission that I am not Joe Frank, has been written for me by Joe Frank.
Joe Frank is what radio in its wildest dreams wishes it could be. Ballsy, intelligent, thoughtful, dangerous. This is not standard NPR stuff. And I think what he explores a lot in his work is the way that words are used to obfuscate as opposed to clarify.
His work, right from when you first heard it back in the 80s, why did it strike such a chord with you?
Well, I think for me as a filmmaker, it was about the sound design. There's always the drone. It gets you sort of like wrapped up in his headspace.
The drone is an important aspect in Joe's sound. I loved it when the music would stop and the drone would come up. Like a big, like this sort of strange foghorn. It's full of harmonics. They're really complex. He used to put them together with lots of different sounds. They add a sort of a strange dither.
Joe used to use two types of drones. One is a synthesizer pad consisting of three or four notes. And then we had this human choir, like ah or ooh, on the 8-track machine. That gave us the flexibility of choosing either one note on the drone or two notes on the drone or the fourth voice on the choir. Bam, people are locked in.
But the writing in itself, I mean, I think it, when I was younger, I didn't appreciate it as much, you know, maybe I took it for granted. And as I've gotten older, I've realized, wow, this guy could craft a story, and how he did it and how he researched this stuff and how he created these monologues were just mind-bending and beautiful. And so I think it was those elements, that sort of sound design element, that not just wrap me, but I think wrap a lot of his listeners up.
Yeah. Can you tell me a bit about Joe Frank's childhood?
His family fled Europe when the Nazis started taking off from Poland. So they were refugees, and his father was way older than his mother. His mother was like 19. I think his dad was like in his 40s or something, or 50s.
Wow.
Yeah, and so it wasn't really a compatible relationship from what he told me. But his dad had a company called Langerman Shoe Company, and he was able to get financing when he moved to New York with the family in Manhattan and had a big business in the Empire State Building. He got a lot of his relatives out of Europe, so he was sort of the patriarch, I think, of the family. Unfortunately, Joe's dad died when he was like 5, I think, and his mother hid it from him at the same time Joe was getting an operation for his club feet. And so when he got out of the hospital, the mom kind of didn't tell him and then eventually did. And so about a year later, the mother married somebody who worked in the business. So he had a stepfather his whole life. There's a lot of stuff in the film that talks about how his mom and his stepfather's relationship wasn't very good either. It was not a very healthy one. And it created a lot of anxiety, I think, for him. And a lot of that developed in his work later.
Yeah. And I'm wondering how much of this dark existential worldview came from his childhood?
Oh, I think a lot of it did. I think Larry Josephson, one of the other great radio guys who's in this picture, says that.
But he allows people to experience feelings that they wouldn't allow themselves to feel. I think that Hitler deserves a bit of credit for Joe Frank's success. The refugee experience shaped Joe's life and made him insecure. You know, were the Nazis going to come back? Would he go broke? Would he get sick? It all had to do with it.
I'm sitting at a dinner party attended by Pol Pot, Hitler, Stalin, and Mao. Seated at another smaller table are Saddam Hussein, Slobodan Milosevic, Pinochet, and some others that I don't recognize. And then there's a third table, sort of a children's table. It has shorter legs and smaller children's chairs. And sitting there are Richard Speck, Gary Gilmore, Jeffrey Dahmer, John Wayne Gacy, Ted Bundy, and Charlie Manson. Then we all get into a discussion concerning the selection of paint colors for the renovation of the kitchen. Hitler is partial to Bavarian cream, and Stalin interrupts and he says he'd like to have a dacha effect with a checkered tablecloth, louvered shutters, gingham curtains. And then Pol Pot suggests little flower boxes for the windowsills, zinnias and daisies he thinks would be very cheerful. And then we talk about books.
When he passed away in January, you heard a lot of stuff in podcasts and you saw a lot of writings about him and stuff like that. And because podcasts are like the new thing nowadays, you know, he kind of blows a lot of people away who think they're doing innovative stuff now. I mean, all those types of things and the deep thoughts he put into his shows, and he did it on a weekly basis when he was doing his thing. I mean, it's amazing the amount of content he put out and how rigorous he was with his shows. I mean, they would literally be stringing them up minutes before they were being played live, so to speak. So his work ethic can't be beat.
Yeah, and that raises the question, because his radio work is so unique and so decidedly Joe Frank-esque, can you hear his influence in other public radio or audio programming? I don't think you can. Do you hear it anywhere?
Well, I'll tell you one thing where I heard it a few years ago. You know, I was sort of taken aback by it because it was so specific to me. And a lot of times when people say, Joe Frank, you know, who's that? Because there's 50% of the people who know precisely who this cat is, and there's 50% who don't. And the people who don't, you have to explain, like, who is he, you know? And
yeah,
like Alexander
yeah.
Payne says in my movie, just listen, you know, because it's hard to sort of wrap your head around it. But what I do to people, and this is to answer your question, is I say, are you familiar with Dos Equis, The Most Interesting Man in the World? And they all go, yeah. I go, okay, you know the sound design on that where a guy's listing great achievements and there's looped music and it's hypnotic and it's funny and it's surreal and it's trippy? That's Joe Frank.
He wouldn't be afraid to show his feminine side if he had one. His mother has a tattoo that reads, son. At museums, he's allowed to touch the art. He is the most interesting man in the world.
Stay thirsty, my friends.
In fact, he has a show called An Enterprising Man. Mm. If you listen to it, it sounds a lot like the Dos Equis commercials. So I mentioned that pop culture reference. People kind of understand it. And then some of them go like, oh, yeah, I know that guy. I've heard him on BEZ or something like that.
I'm curious about why Joe Frank isn't more well-known. It seems to me that a lot of that might have to do with the fact that his work was so groundbreaking, so original, and so dark and existential. Maybe it was just too intense for some people to handle. What do you think?
I think you're on the right track with that. So the 50% who know him, usually there's 1% that know him and they go, no, thank you. And it's for the reasons I think they talked about. You know, sometimes he brings up things about the human condition that maybe people would rather keep to themselves and not have to have somebody tell them it, you know, because it can be a little bit alarming, disarming, intense sometimes when he gets going. I see it as sort of like a good art film. You know, I can go to see lots of great art films and everybody wants to go to the multiplex though and see the junk. So it's a safe zone, I think, for people to maybe not open themselves up to his work.
I remember one of the shows, my favorite one, from the helicopter, the traffic report over LA, and it's just these horrific accidents and you don't know what is the angle. It takes 15 minutes to figure out. Oh, I see. He's talking about the apocalypse and Jesus coming back and Armageddon. And it's like lobster dipped in butter. It's just delicious and good for you. It's not good for you, but, you know.
On the westbound 101 around Topanga Canyon, we have a spill of high-level biohazard waste materials cordoning off the entire neighborhood of Woodland Hills. And there appears to be a drive-by shooting gone terribly wrong on the 210 westbound at Vernon. CHP converging on that area. And at the Corona Expressway out in Chino Hills at Grand Avenue, a hot air balloon has been ensnared in a high tension wire, and the gondola appears to be melting, its inhabitants apparently incinerated. So there's a lot of rubbernecking that's slowing things down all the way to Riverside Avenue, and you might want to avoid that.
I think Joe is a perfect example of the kind of person who understands the work that you have to generate yourself and figure out every step of yourself. His shows, there was nothing like really what he did. He just forged a new genre, his own.
What do you think is Joe Frank's legacy?
You know, one of the lines that's in the movie, I think, and I think a lot of people say is the term human condition. You know, he was sort of a master of capturing the human condition in his own way, whether it was through his own life or through other people's lives. I think he was, you know, he was a one of a kind in that way.
Mm-hmm. What do you hope people take away from watching Joe Frank somewhere out there?
That's a good question. I think he was a guy who never compromised. And I think when anybody does their art, I think he's a role model for that. Or he's one of the guys who didn't compromise in anything he did. And he, like Grace said, he forged his own genre. And I think that, you know, that's a tough thing to do in any art form. He's sort of the gold standard, I think, for somebody who pursued something that creative that he wanted to do and blew most people out of the water while doing it.
It's odd. You don't experience your own death. The last thing you experience is the last moment of your life. When you die, you have no idea that you just died. If you suddenly die at home, your friends and relatives grieve and cry and embrace. It's very emotional. It's a tragedy. You're gone. But at the same time, you're not completely gone, because your body is still lying on the floor of your apartment. It's as if you've gone off on a trip from which you'll never return and left an unseemly mess behind. And that mess is you.